Are you tired of taking flack for your faith? Do you find that just because you're a Christian, you have an impossible situation with your family or your work? But what do you do? Don't give up. Stay tuned. Don't give up. God has a word of hope for you today.
Thanks for joining us for this Friday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Living on the Edge is an international teaching and discipleship ministry featuring the Bible teaching of Chip Ingram. I'm Dave Drewy, and today Chip will cover four ways that we can reach out to help those whose faith has come under attack. Now, if you have to break away from the program today, remember you can hear it online anytime by going to livingontheedge.org. Just click on the Listen Now button there on our homepage. Now, let's get to today's message from the book of 1 Thessalonians, chapter 2, called How to Lift Up Those Who Are Down.
I'll never forget the first day of Sociology 101. I was 18 years old. I had just become a Christian about 7 or 8 months before. I had never opened a Bible in my life until I was 18, and so I've been reading it now about 6 or 7 months. I was overwhelmed with what I was learning. I had zeal. I was excited. The thought of forgiveness and peace and purpose. I was a zealous, brand new, whistling in the hall Christian. And then I went to sociology class. You got to remember, this is 1973. The 60s are rounding to an end. Kent State is barely in the rearview mirror for those of the era. I walk into class, and I notice there's an unusual guy sitting on the desk up front, and he sat there bow-legged, you know, crossed, you know, looking at us, saying nothing. And then he began to open up, and we found out he was the teacher. Every textbook we studied, whatever you always thought or believed about life, about God, about America, about anything, he had a book to refute it. And he started for the next semester, week after week after week, to challenge every single thing that I believed, and I mean decimated the Christian faith. And it wasn't long before he raised some doubts in my heart, and then I felt inadequate and I couldn't answer the questions. And I wasn't ready to give up my faith because I didn't want to become like this guy, but he was dealing with a lot of issues that I didn't know how to deal with. And I just felt knocked down. His arguments weren't good enough or strong enough to really cause me to question the depths of my faith, but they were strong enough just to keep me messed up most of the time. And my observation is, it's only a matter of time before something or someone attacks your faith that will raise doubts in your heart, confusion in your soul, and a sense of inadequacy in your mind. In fact, you may be there tonight. How do we encourage those people whose faith is being knocked down? How do you encourage the people that you know and that you rub shoulders with whose faith is called into question? They're ridiculed or attacked and maybe even persecuted on the job or in their family situation or on a sports team or school where they're at. How do you come alongside them when you see them wavering and faltering? What is it that God wants you to do as a fellow believer to encourage them, to lift them up, to help them work through their Sociology 101 experience and come out the other end a stronger Christian? That's what we want to ask and answer today. And God has a game plan. You know what the game plan is? Remember, remember, remember. Now, the Apostle Paul, as we learned, went into a Greek town of about 200,000 people, Thessalonica, planted a church. It started to multiply. They were becoming well-known. I mean, they were on fire and making incredible impact. And then some people came along and started slandering Paul, slandering their faith. Just a little criticism. Oh, you know that Paul, yeah, we heard about him. He's just out for your money. Oh, that new Christianity stuff, oh, man, it's dying out. And they kept poking and poking and poking. And so by the time Timothy came back to give the report, he said, Paul, they're really doing well, but man, they are taking it on the chin. And so in chapter 2, verses 1 to 12, 1 Thessalonians, guess what Paul does? He causes them to remember the most important things in their life in order to restore their perspective so that they grow through their faith being knocked down. Now, I'd like to read through the passage, and as I read it, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pull out a pen. I'm going to put you to work. We're going to do a little Bible study. Whenever you read a passage of Scripture, words or phrases or concepts that are repeated are often the key to understanding the passage. So let's listen to what the Apostle Paul does. First, in verses 1 and 2, he reminds them of their reception of the message. He says, "For you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain. But after we already suffered and been mistreated in Philippi, as you know, we had the boldness in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amid such opposition." Notice in verses 3 through 6, he reminds them of the character of the messengers. He says, "For our exhortation does not come from error or impurity or by way of deceit. But just as we've been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak. Not as pleasing men, but God who examines our hearts. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is our witness. Nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though, as apostles of Christ, we might have asserted our authority." Next, he reminds them of the ministry they received in verses 7 through 11. He goes, "But we prove to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her children. Having thus a fond affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives." Why? Because you had become very dear to us. Verse 9, put a box around the next phrase. "For you recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working night and day, so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God." Notice verse 10. "You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behave toward you believers. Just as," verse 11, "you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each of you as a father would his own children." Why? Paul reminds them of the results in their lives when they receive the message, so that, or resulting in, that you may walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Now, just by way of doing a little Bible study, by the way, this is what I do. I'll read a passage over and over and over. And any concept that is repeated, then I'll circle it or underline it. Look at verse 1, "you yourselves know." Verse 2, "you know." Skip down to verse 5, "as you know." Skip down to verse 9, "for you recall." Verse 10, "you are witnesses." Verse 11, "you know." Are you getting the idea that possibly the Apostle Paul, writing to these people whose faith is being undermined, that he wants them to remember something? Could this be a possibility? Why? See, there's something extremely powerful about remembering. What we tend to do is see the problem on the horizon, and it doesn't have to be very big, but as that problem gets closer and closer and closer, what happens? We lose perspective, and we lose sight of all of this, let alone all that happened behind us. And one of the great ways to get perspective is to pull that problem back in light of history and what God has done and who he is and what you've experienced. Then all of a sudden, it's just a little pebble to deal with. Remembering God's work in the past is the key to getting perspective for doing his will in the present. That's what he's going to teach him. He's going to teach him, yeah, there's attack, there's slander, you lose perspective, but remembering God's work in your past is the key to getting perspective to do God's will in the present. And now what I'd like to do is I'd like to give you four key principles to help people who are faltering. Here's how to help them. First thing I think you need to do is help them remember the day they came to Christ. Notice what Paul says in verse 1. "For you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you wasn't in vain." It means it wasn't empty. It's in a tense of the verb that means we came and something happened and the results are continuing. He goes on in verse 2. "But after we had already suffered and been mistreated." He said, remember, we were in Philippi. Man, we got our heads bashed in. "And yet, even though we went through that, you know that we had the boldness in our God." I like the NIV's translation. It says, "We dared to speak to you about the gospel of God amidst such opposition." Let me give you a couple things as you try and encourage people about remembering their day when they were saved. First, help them remember their experience. The way God wants you to encourage other people, He wants you to do something to spur them on to remember the very day that they were saved. To reminisce, if you will. It will be a powerful experience, and it'll give them perspective. The second thing you might want to do to help others is help them remember the price tag and the sacrifice of those who shared it. He says, you know, this stuff, preaching the gospel, it's not cheap and it's not easy. The last major town I did it in was Philippi. I got beat up. I got stripped publicly. I ended up in jail. And then I got run out of town. Now, thinking human beings realize that when that happens to you, keep your mouth shut next time. The Apostle Paul says, though, very interesting word. It has the idea of confidence and courage combined. And as you look at the translation, some of them translate the confidence and others the courage. We had boldness, or we dared to speak, even though there was a lot of opposition. What do you think the message is to the Thessalonians? Hey, you really matter. When we came into town, we knew it was going to be a rough situation, and we dared to speak. We boldly proclaimed the message because that's how much you matter to God. When's the last time you thought of the price tag of the people who shared Christ with you? The bricklayer who was so instrumental in my life, I remember the first Bible study I went to. It was on Thursday nights. Real down-home guy. He'd come with his moccasins, and he'd open up his living room, and he wanted to reach this campus for Christ. And the fullback on the football team invited me to go. So I walked up this little road about a mile, mile and a half, and I walked in Dave's house, and I didn't know what to expect. I mean, I don't know anything about this Christian stuff. I mean, I've been a Christian like 2 months, and there's four other people and me. And then I learned later that for 4 years, that's about how many people he had, 5 people to 8 people. Twice a week, he went down on campus and shared his faith. Every Thursday night for 3.5, 4 years, he opens up his home. He had decided this would be the last year. If God doesn't do something, then he's moving on. He moved to that little town to reach that campus. He was independently employed. He was a bricklayer. He could go wherever he wanted, and he traveled all over to do his trade. He wanted to reach that campus. He moved his family to that little town to reach that campus of about 4,000 or 5,000. Now, for whatever reason, that year it took off. That was my freshman year. By the time I was a junior, we dug out the basement underneath his house, and we had 250 kids in Bible study all over campus. And we saw a wave and a movement of God. But you know something? That guy hung in there for 4 years with 5 people a night on Thursday, and him giving 2 or 3 nights a week to tell kids about Christ that didn't seem to give a rip. But he kept telling, he kept going, he kept casting the seed. And I fortunately was, you know, kind of in that last installment. And I realized he paid a price. And when I think about that, I think, what an honor, God. That encourages me. Remember the day that you were saved. It will give perspective and encourage others. Whatever you can do to encourage them to remember the day they were saved. Second principle here is not only remember the day, but Paul says, remember the people. We need to remember the people that God used in our life, because when our faith is a little shaky, bringing back to mind those people and remembering their character and remembering later their love will help us get perspective. Notice what Paul says in verse 3. He says, for our exhortation or our appeal does not come from error, it means delusion, or impurity. He says, but just as we have been approved by God, notice this phrase, to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak. We've been approved by God. God's approval is on our life, and we have been entrusted. We are stewards of the gospel, so we speak. How? Not as pleasing people, but God, and he says, who examines our hearts. The character of the servants of the gospel message, he says, we were straight shooters. Notice verse 5. He says, for we never came with flattering speech. We would call it a con man. It's the idea of leading people along, getting them to follow you, building into their confidence until the point you take them down a different path, and the whole goal of the different path is you fleece them, either emotionally, monetarily, or sexually. He says, not us. We never came with flattery, as you know, nor with pretext, or it's literally a mask, no hypocrisy. We didn't come for greed or money. He says, God's our witness. nor did we seek glory from men. This wasn't about self-promotion or making a name or trying to be a somebody, either from you or others. Even though, by the way, let's get this straight, as apostles, we had every right to exercise some authority, but we didn't even do that. We gave away our apostolic rights in order to serve you. Here's his argument. They're being attacked, and they're going through their sociology 101 experience of faltering in the faith. And the Apostle Paul says, first of all, let's remember when you were saved. Remember that? Yeah. Second, he says, let's remember the character of the messengers. Remember me. Remember Timothy. Remember Silas. Remember how we lived. These attacks, these questions that are coming to your mind, they're unfounded. And so let me give you a couple ways underneath here to help people. First, help people remember the character of those who ministered to them. Second, get them to compare the character and the quality of those who've really genuinely helped them in their faith with the character and the quality of those who are attacking. I'll still never forget the day. This sociology, I mean, he had me going up one day and down the next. And then he talked a little bit about his family, and I asked questions, and I saw his lifestyle, and I saw his morals, or I saw his lack of them. Then I saw his hypocrisy and his inconsistency. And what he was good at, it was a game people played in the 60s and late 70s. You know what people were really good at then? Cutting everything down and saying what was wrong with everything. But there weren't very many people who then stood up and said, and I'm willing to own the moral responsibility about how to make it right. And I remember I was confused, and I stepped back one day and I thought, okay, there's a lot of questions and I can't handle all this. But I watched the way this bricklayer and his wife love each other and the kind of family they have. And when he says something, he means it, and he's faithful and he's loyal and he's true. And all he's done is love me. And I weigh that over against this professor who cuts down everything that I believe and who's cynical and sarcastic and his relationships aren't working. And he's hypocritical in what he says versus what he does. Now, which of those carry the most weight? Do you get it? See, that's what the Apostle Paul's doing. And we need to ask and help people who are discouraged, ask them whose life has the most credibility.
Chip will be right back with some application for today's teaching. But if you've just joined us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. And today's message, How to Lift Up Those Who Are Down, is from Chip's series, Lift, The Awesome Power of Encouragement. In this series, Chip opens the book of 1 Thessalonians and teaches us what biblical encouragement looks like. You'll learn how to help people overcome the feelings of discouragement. You'll discover how to bring out the very best in those around you. And you'll understand how to give hope to someone who feels hopeless. This series will help you serve others, and it'll strengthen you at the same time. All of the Lift resources are available right now on our website. In addition, Chip's free message notes will help you dig deeper when you use them to study along as you listen. To get started, just go to our website, livingontheedge.org, and order today. Now, here's Chip.
I'll be right back to give some real specific application about how God can use you to lift up someone who's down. But before I do, I want to stop and thank a very special group of people that partner with us financially, and they allow us to lift up people. I mean, some people that no one cares about except God. I got an email from a pastor in Texas, John Conley Prison. It's a maximum security prison. We've been working with them, and he's taken one whole section of the prison. They did it voluntarily. The warden let him do it. They went through the Romans 12 material. In fact, I remember signing certificates of graduation and got a personal letter from every inmate. I just got to tell you, it was awesome and is awesome. And now they're going to go through overcoming emotions that destroy, because anger issues unresolved really make a big difference. But this email is like the next level. As a financial partner, I want you to listen to this and just say, wow, God, I got to be a part of this. It says the prison is maximum security, so all the sentences are 50 years and above. It's divided into two parts. Part A is recognized as the good side of the prison, and most inmates exhibit good behavior. Part B is solitary confinement, and these prisoners only see other people 1 hour a day. No one works or interacts with any of the inmates in Part B.
But the wardens have seen the dramatic change in those who went through the Romans 12 study and have asked Pastor Brubaker to actually mentor and teach in Part B. And so Part B has launched Overcoming Emotions That Destroy. I mean, if you know anything about prisoners and behavior and anger that's stuffed, and most abusers and prisoners, most prisoners come from backgrounds where they didn't have a dad. There's all kind of issues that if you're really going to help them at the heart, you got to deal with what's going on down deep inside. Here's what you need to hear. When we go to the prisoner, when we care about the least, the marginalized, the people that no one cares about, we're doing exactly what's on God's heart. And your financial gifts have allowed us to do this. Thank you very, very much. And if you're listening to me and thinking, you know what, I had no idea you guys do that kind of stuff. That is so neat. I would like to be involved in it. Dave, in just a minute, will give you very specific information about how you can partner. Go on the website, write a check. Let's get in on making a difference together.
Thanks, Chip. If you want to help us make a difference in places like Chip just mentioned, you can send a gift to Living on the Edge online by going to livingontheedge.org. Or if you'd prefer to talk with someone, just give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. On behalf of Chip and the team at Living on the Edge, thank you for your partnership with us. Now here's Chip with some final thoughts from today's talk.
Do you know someone who is really going through a hard time right now because of their faith? I want you to ask God to bring to mind, is there someone who's being criticized or bombarded? Someone who's ridiculed, maybe by their family or at work? I mean, someone who's maybe even persecuted. I mean, they are about ready to give up the faith, or it's a constant struggle. Does anyone come to your mind like that? See, that was the situation that the Thessalonians found themselves in. And Paul wrote this letter to say, I want to help you. I want to encourage you. And the theme of his letter was, remember, remember, remember. And so as this person comes to your mind, I want to give you a little game plan to help them. Remember, a word of encouragement can transform a person's life. Your time with them, helping them remember, can make all the difference in the world. But you say, well, what is it that they need to remember? There's going to be four things. I want to give you two of them today. The first thing is they need to remember the actual day that they came to Christ. They need to ponder and think about when was the day, what happened, where were they, what was their life before. Because see, what this will do is give them perspective. And that sounds so trite. Most people won't do that, and they won't do it well. But let me give you a little clue. Here's what you do. You know this person, they've come to your mind, God's brought them to your mind. You give them a call, send them an email and say, hey, can we do kind of lunch next week or breakfast, or can we just grab a cup of coffee or take a walk? And you don't make a big deal, you don't act like it's some big meeting, but you know their situation. And when you get with them, you say, Bob, Mary, whatever their name, would you tell me how you came to know Christ? And they might say, well, gosh, you know, no, I want the long version. I really want to hear it. And ask questions and get them to rehearse and think back. What was their life like before they became a Christian? How forgiven, how loved, and the transformation that's occurred. And what that will do is give perspective. That's what Paul did here. The second thing you need to do is help them remember the people God used in their life. Isn't that what Paul did right out of this passage? You see, you got away these people that are attacking you and these people that have loved you. And you have to say to yourself, I'm getting a lot of flack, but in the end, who do I want to be like? And you can be the friend that just helps them rehearse it and say, tell me who led you to Christ. What was attractive about their life? What was it about their marriage? Or how was it that they lived in their singleness? What was it, the winsome quality? And you ask them, and you get them talking, and you know what will happen? Someone's going to get encouraged, and the Holy Spirit of God will use you to do it. What a deal, huh? Go do it.
Here at Living on the Edge, our mission is to help Christians live like Christians. One of the ways we do that is by giving away free resources. We want these biblically based messages to get into the hands of as many people as possible. So while this series is on the air, you can download the MP3 messages absolutely free. If you found a particular message of significant help in your faith journey, I hope you'll go to livingontheedge.org and download it, and maybe share it with a friend. Don't forget to include a note about how it made a difference in your life. We want to help you be an encourager today. Well, Monday on Living on the Edge, Chip will continue our current series, Lift, the Awesome Power of Encouragement. So be sure to make plans to join us then. For Chip and the entire team here, thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.